Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. And it is now or never. You know, I know that there's a whole... It's only going to get worse, folks. It's just going to completely go... I mean, schools just started. We haven't had any school shootings yet, but it's a part of their program. And so what do we expect? Are we expecting that everything's going to be rosy this year? Paul, welcome back, by the way.
Thank you. It's not going to be rosy this year.
It's only going to get worse. It's only going to get worse. It's only going to get worse. More people are going to die. The intent is because that they've already told us this. They told us this decades ago that there are too many people alive that they really do need to kill people. Bill Gates has actually been in a TED talk. He actually said those words. And so, you know, when you become arrogant because you believe that you're untouchable, you actually start making mistakes like that. So, anyway, well, we're right in the juicy part of what the federal government can do and what it can't do.
Right.
And so these are the enumerated powers. This is the only place where powers were granted. Everywhere else we'll find either reservations, you know, like forbiddens, the forbidden zone, like Section 9 of Article 1, or we'll find things that people would construe as powers, like in Article 4, you know, with the admitting of states and the ability to basically regulate or manage territories, they would think that they have a power to possess and operate and maintain, but they don't. So anyway, I'm ready to move forward. Any more go-backs?
No. We ended up on to borrow money on the credit of the United States.
Right.
And your color coding says this one is particularly egregious.
Absolutely. Because look how much money they spend on things. They're creating debt unconstitutionally. Mm-hmm. How many people have you ever heard that our debt is a strategic liability that puts our nation at its greatest risk?
I don't hear many people say that.
You don't?
No.
So, but there have been generals that have actually, I think it was under, maybe it was a Trump former general that's come out and said, you know, either with Trump or with Biden or what have you. But I remember in the 90s, and I remember hearing Democrats talking about Bush because Bush was spending so much money. They go, you can't look at that debt and think okay. That's good.
Let me take that back. I'm thinking more today.
Yeah.
You know, where we're spending money like it's water out of a faucet. But you're right. Back then, people were especially you have one party in power and the other one is calling them out.
Right.
About how they're spending so much money or
correct.
Borrowing
yep.
so much money and the national debt, the debt clock. Okay. You know, and, you know, it's like they pontificate about it, but they're still spending.
Right.
And whoever gets in power continues to spend beyond the previous administration.
Yeah. And you know, the power of the purse is actually, it belongs with Congress. But mm-hmm. it seems like the president is constantly going, oh, but we're going to spend money in this direction. And so
right.
this is where the separations of power have just, I mean, there's been this, I don't know, this union or joining or an amalgamation of evil that has kind of come forth as all of these players. And I think that the party has facilitated this. I believe the Uniparty has kind of brought this together, and they deliberately use this Mutt and Jeff or this good cop, bad cop mentality, because whatever side you're on, of course, that's the good cop side.
Mm-hmm.
And the other side is the bad cop side. And
right.
it just depends on what side you're on, because everybody's on the good cop side as they see it.
And by the way, what side you're on when, depending on who's in power, right?
Right.
And so that's where we are, because to borrow money on the credit of the United States just opens so many doors. You know, you get to, you got the Federal Reserve, which was a creation outside of the authority of the Constitution. I mean, if they were going to do something like that, should they not have had a constitutional amendment?
So, absolutely. It's the same thing with the bank, same thing with a lot of things that they've done. Absolutely. They would have needed that, and they knew they couldn't get it, so they just did it anyway. But here's the kicker, I think, because we can actually prove, because we have bean counters, and bean counters love to count, and they love to get the data and come up with totals. And it's easy to audit. From 1900, just start with January 1st, the first minute of the century, and come to today, and every dollar that was spent on unconstitutional programs, expenditures, it doesn't matter if it's unconstitutional dollars that were expended as an expenditure of government, then that actually goes into the bucket of unconstitutional money. And then we look at all of the money that comes into the government from the people via the tax system. That's money that we've accrued. And then on the, you know, so that goes in the center. And on the other side of, you know, that pot, we actually look at what was the constitutional outlays that they, you know, like war. They have the right to, you know, to spend money on war. They don't have the right to spend money on trains, on agriculture, on, you know, all of these, you know, commerce, these bureaucracies that they've created without any authority, the Department of Transportation, on and on and on. And so,
can I add something?
Yeah, go ahead.
Don't lose your thought, but can I add, they have a right to spend money on war that Congress has declared.
Yes, correct. That is correct.
Okay.
Right.
All right, go ahead.
Okay. So, but they do have the right to spend money on defense. You don't have to necessarily, you don't have to have a war to spend money on a Navy.
Right.
Right? They have this right there in the Constitution, the right and power to actually create and maintain a Navy. And so they could actually just continually build the Navy, build the Navy, build the Navy. But those guys that wear shiny stuff on their shoulders that are a part of the militia of defending the homeland, they go, well, that's not fair because we don't have the same career opportunities because we don't like the water.
Yeah.
You know, and I know I'm mocking people, and I can be terribly sarcastic, but the fact of the matter is the Constitution does not allow for the standing of an army and or the permanent creation of or a career path for army officers. I'm sorry. They realize the danger, and the system that they created was one of the militia. We'll get to that. But the fact is that they could actually spend and bolster, and it was brilliant that they did this in the 1800s to protect our commerce so that we could become a, you know, an undeniable force in the world of commerce. And we did do that. And then all of a sudden we started protecting all commerce. And that's where we actually should have been going out to the rest of the world and saying, look, you know, there's a cost to this, but, you know, it's all about, you know, well, I'll do you a favor so you'll owe me. And this is corruption. This is how corruption works. If we actually ran it by the book, the way that you were supposed to run the Constitution, things would be a lot different. But anyway, so you've got this third pot of, you know, legitimate spending. And you're going to come up with this as your total. We should have a surplus of money. Where did all that money go? It went into that first pot of unconstitutional spending. And why we have this thing called the debt. Because now the fourth little pot is the, you know, the negative. And actually you could put, you know, if you kind of do it I'll just use the word across, on the very top of the vertical line is the money coming in, and on the bottom is the money going out. So you got green up top, red on the bottom, and then you've got red to the left and you've got green to the right. constitutional spending, all the money coming in, obviously constitutionally done, and or should have been, but the money that's being spent out to the left is unconstitutional, that'd be red, and the debt at the bottom, the accruing debt because of the bleeding to the left, and how we're now at this point, we can easily prove that we should have a surplus of money.
Mm-hmm.
And that the whole world and our own government has been working against us in helping spread the wealth and establishing these huge conglomerates, these huge, you know, trillion-dollar, you know, NGO corporations and so forth. Anyway, fact is, folks, we do not, the United States, we the people do not owe a penny of that debt. We don't. It's all fraud. It is all a facade that we have all been duped into believing that that's legitimate spending. When it clearly says that they can borrow money on the credit of the United States, that they where it doesn't state the obvious that you can't spend money on things you have no authority. I mean, why would you even say that? It's like, you know, it's
true.
It's like having them write a little line that this is ink that we're using on paper.
Right.
Okay. So sure. The next clause is another real powerful one, which is right. To regulate commerce with foreign nations and among the states and with the Indian tribes. Yeah. Well, among the several states. It doesn't matter. Right. Among the states. Okay. It not within the states or regulate mm-hmm. commerce of the states.
Right.
It is among the several states. In other words, how they interact with each other. Nothing as far as what they do inside and so forth. And the whole reason why they have this little bit of regulation over the commerce among the several states is to ensure that the states get along, that they don't practice economic warfare. Well, okay, so here the federal government for out the gate did a good job in trying to play, you know, the good cop in not allowing the states to play warfare with each other. And all the time they were taking notes of going, you know what, there's a lot of opportunity here in this game if we actually started conducting economic warfare against the states. And they started doing that in the 1820s.
That early,
and it was called the Railroad. And shortly after that, it was called the Farmers.
What were they doing with the railroads? So 1820, okay, railroads, you had to pretty much be wealthy to build a railroad.
Yeah, so and so they helped subsidize, right. So they helped subsidize, and they stole land from the states, basically saying, hey, we're going to create these thoroughfares, and this is going to benefit you, but we're taking your land for railroad. And if you look at how much land the railroad got, it was just obscene.
So what would have been the right way? Yes, it's like so many miles each side of a railroad. Is
well,
that right?
And so they did that because they didn't have accurate surveys necessary in carving through mountains and hills and so forth, right? So they said, well, we don't know if you can't draw a straight line with a railroad. And a railroad car can only traverse up a certain angle.
Right.
And so it has to maintain a specific grade going up and coming down. And so to do that, you have to kind of switch back and forth, going up the side of a mountain range and crossing up that mountain, right?
Right.
And so how do they do that? Well, so they basically said, you know, they carved out all of this land and they gave that to the railroad. But what they should have done, and they should never have even done this, but they should have basically said, state, you know, this is in your interest and we will lease the land initially for the railroad. Actually, they didn't even have the authority to do that. But
okay.
But to do
what would have been the right way to do that?
So the right way would have actually been what Madison called for. The right way would have been giving the federal government the ability to basically create the Department of Transportation.
And right. And all they had to do. Okay. So they present this to Madison and he says, and he essentially likes it, but then he tells them, you need to make a constitutional amendment.
Which right? was a decade before the railroad even came out. Correct.
Okay. So with that instruction, dumb question, GR, why didn't they just do that? Why didn't they just make the constitutional amendment?
Okay. So they went back. They were upset because they felt that they had the wool pulled over their eyes or, the blanket pulled over. They got beat by Madison because they thought that's what he wanted. He didn't tell them specifically. He failed to just say, go get an amendment to do this. He basically, okay. they said, what can we do? What does America need so we can create legislation to create this hallmark legislation for you as you leave office? And this is why this was his very last act as president, very last act.
Okay.
So they went back and they just thought a bill would have sufficed. And when they came back, Madison basically pulled out the four no-no clauses or the mystical clauses, general welfare and defense, the commerce clause, the necessary and proper clause, the supremacy clause, and says none of those clauses, because that's what they tried to basically say, is based on these clauses, we're going to assume this power. And he says, I'm sorry, those powers cannot be used as portals to create a new power. We have to amend the Constitution. Go do that. And so I can understand that them doing it once. But when they came back to Monroe in 1822 and said, please amend the, please give us this power for the Cumberland Gap to basically create this, this road to toll system so we can tax and get into this game of roads, he said that power doesn't exist. And they used justifications of not within those clauses, but they did use for the national defense, being able to move, armaments and military pieces from one state to another for internal defense purposes. They used post roads. They used, I forget, there's a total of six. And Monroe basically says, even if you combined all of your justifications together, the power still does not exist to do what you're asking to do. You have to amend the Constitution. So you think even, they got it wrong. They thought they could do it because they came up with this justification. So they waited until 1830 with Jackson. And at this point in time, the Jackson and company, the federal government, I believe it was John Quincy Adams, that started playing around with helping the railroads out a little bit. That was the beginning. Mm-hmm. And so when Jackson, unseated John Quincy Adams, Congress goes, okay, here's a big government guy. Look at he's growing these bureaucracies in the state house. He actually did a clean house. Right. He got rid of a lot of people in the state house, the treasury and so forth, and seated his own people. And, so he was called the guy that put the spoil system on steroids because, it was about rewarding those who supported you by putting them on the government dole so that they got their little direct kickback. So anyway. So they went to Jackson with the third attempt to create these footings for a Department of Transportation. And Jackson said, you can't do this. Madison told you couldn't. Monroe told you couldn't. And now I have to tell you, if the good people of the United States want us to have these powers, then, give us an amendment. But the whole time, the railroads was out there and the federal government started playing in that. And they, out of one side of the mouth, they were saying one thing, and out of the other side of the mouth, they were doing something else.
Okay, so someone who was able to afford to some degree to start the railroads began looking to the federal government for help with this big project.
Yes.
That's what I'm guessing. Okay. Yep. And in the process, so they were there three times. Not only was it, this wasn't a hard set, no, you're never going to do this. This is, It's not that we don't have the authority, but here's what you can do. Make an amendment. Okay, Madison, make an amendment, says Monroe. Make an amendment, says Jackson, and they still don't do it. What was wrong with Congress? Why was it so hard to follow the rules and make an amendment?
Well, so I look at it this way. I think it was divine providence. I think that the contention that, you know, they couldn't just do what they wanted. They couldn't be tyrannical with the Constitution. They really wanted to. They wanted to get to that point. They wanted to prove that evil could, you know, could win or prevail. And instead, they never realized that, you know, this could really become a rally point. And I believe that that was the whole thing. I mean, I presented a lot of this information to Glenn Beck and actually got feedback from Trevor Lawton's wife, Victoria, that, mm-hmm. you know, she was the one that researched this when I was poking Glenn Beck in the eye on this. And I said, this right here is a golden goose. I mean, mm-hmm. this one right here refutes, you know, all of these other usurpations. And so, you know, you really need to focus on this. This was back in 2011, 2012. You know, before I wrote my first book. And so, anyway, and when supposedly we thought Glenn Beck was, you know, approachable, but he was already up in the clouds in his own head. So, long story short, I realized that, you know, the entertainment industry, you know, was really deaf to reality. They didn't care. But the fact is that this is something that is coming back, you know, where, you know, the chickens are coming home to roost. And this is where we actually have the ability, as we shine light on the truth, as we lift the rocks that have covered, you know, this, I'll just say this carnage, these violations of the Constitution. It just makes it really hard for people to say, you know, the next thing you know, they start throwing out counter accusations instead of actually being able to, because they can't defend this. It's indefensible. Mm-hmm. When right. Madison, Monroe, and even Jackson, I mean, come on.
Right.
So, yeah, how can you defend this usurpation for the Department of Housing, the Department of Energy, the Department of Education, the Department of Labor? I mean, on and on. Environmental Protection, BLM, all of these things are going, come on, folks. Which is why that one video we have out on YouTube, the three presidential vetoes of the Department of Transportation, I think it's just it's a seven-minute dynamic video. It's academic. It gives you everything you need, and it basically creates the question, if they couldn't do this, then where did they get the power and authority to do all the rest of these things?
Right.
It's that simple. But anyway, so this was all about regulating commerce and how we can kind of go down this path. We got about a minute and a half to get into this next one. And okay. So the first one is establish a uniform rule of naturalization, right?
Okay, right.
So what does that mean? Because I've actually gotten into these discussions with people that they believe that Congress can regulate. We'll get into the next line of this, but what does this mean? Establish a uniform rule of naturalization. This is about what it takes to become a U.S. citizen from a foreigner, right?
Sure.
Okay.
And uniform would mean the same thing across the nation, like uniform in terms of taxes, a rule that applies everywhere all the time. It's uniformly done. You can't, right?
Yes, but why was this important to add here? Okay, so we got 20 seconds left. So when we come back from the break, what I'll do is I'll ask you to read Article 1, Section 9, Section 1, Article 1, Section 9, Subsection 1, the very first part of Section 1, or Section 9, and then look at that, and then now you can understand why they had to have this full control over this. Folks, we're going going into break. And so, like I said, this is a really good question. Why did they have this very specific line at this point in time? This could have easily been something that came out later, but they actually made sure that they inserted this here at this point, and there's a reason for it. And we will, and it all has to do with slavery, but we'll be right back after this.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, health care, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of Liberty. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so did Section 9 kind of help clarify why they had to put that there?
Well, I can see that. Yes, they had to.
Well, so, so the migration of persons at
this. You want
me to read that? No. I'm just going to. We'll get to that after this, obviously. It's coming right up. But the migration of persons was being given to the states to control all migration of persons coming into the United States until 1808. Not just the migration, but the importation. See, states right. were actually importing, and it would have become a real mess if they basically said the federal government could control the migration of people, but states had the ability to import. In other words, now you'd have two masters, and it, what they wanted to do was they wanted to make sure that the federal government couldn't get in the state's knickers at all regarding people coming into the states, period.
Okay.
And so there was a 20-year moratorium on the federal government's involvement, but the federal government was granted the authority to establish a uniform rule of what it would take, just so that the states couldn't play games of, well, we say, you know, that if you're of this descent, this nationality, blah, you can instantly become a citizen. And so, no, they made sure that the federal government, the general government, maintained the controls of a standard system.
Okay.
Because even today, we would see that California and some of these real liberal states on the southern border would just allow people to come right in and make them citizens instantly. And they're sure. doing that in, right. In direct conflict and violation to the U.S. Constitution.
Right.
But nobody is investigating this, and the reason why nobody wants to actually pick these rocks up to see the vermin underneath and the parasites and how it, you know, how abundant that parasitic life is under these rocks, is because it feeds their, you know, it feeds the federal motives of destroying America.
Mm-hmm.
They're all basically turning their heads because they know the outcome is our demise. That's how corrupt this is. The system was already corrupt in the 80s. As a matter of fact, when we look at immigration problems and we go back in history and we look at the Operation Wetback, you know, that was instituted by, who was it, Hoover? Or, you know, when we start looking at how the progressives in the beginning, started, vilifying the illegals and the migrant workers. And at that point in time, it wasn't really an invasion. And I believe it was Eisenhower that deported, probably up to that point in time, he deported the most because people were coming back from the war. They were looking for jobs. And, there were still too many migrants up here holding jobs. And they said, you know what, you got to go back.
How did he do that?
Mm-hmm. Well, so if you're here illegally, if you're not here to become a citizen, you're just a migrant worker, then by law, you're supposed to go back after, because they do have migration laws, but some people came up here and stayed. And so those are the people that they basically rounded up in Operation Wetback. And folks, I didn't make the name up. They made that name up.
Yeah, but they rounded them up and
deported them.
Wow. Okay. So they knew where they were. They picked them up and they sent them back.
Actually, they didn't know where they all were, but they did their job in finding as many as they could. And I forget how many he deported, a million, more than that. Mm-hmm. I forget. I mean, it's actually in, if you read the petition number 3, Stopping the Invasion, I cite specifically how many people he deported. But that's because mm-hmm. that's the federal government's job. They're supposed to repel an invasion. And when you have people that come here that, because if you come here as a migrant worker, you have to come through a port of entry and identify yourself as a migrant worker, which means mm-hmm. that you'll get this, if you want to call it a passport, or you'll be allowed to be admitted into the country for a certain period of time. And then you go back home. And we had those standards. So these were the uniform rules of naturalization and migration. So they actually started creating these laws, and they started basically creating laws that they had no constitutional standing. Like, where do we have refugees in the mix here? Do we have a responsibility of taking up the world's refugees?
Nope.
No. Where did that come from? That came from a treaty with the UN. This unconstitutional, treaty and alliance that we had, it started feeding this beast and making us go down this other path. And so mm-hmm. it's all rooted on, how and just how wild they could become in, violating the Constitution. But going back to the whole reason the federal government had this was to ensure that the states couldn't behave badly. Now it is the federal government and the states together behaving badly.
Right.
So, but this next line is interesting because this is where I got into, and I got to get back to this good guy because he's a decent person, but he really believes, but actually I don't want to pollute the pool.
Okay. What does this mean? We have to establish a uniform rule of naturalization and uniform laws on the subject of bankruptcies throughout the United States.
So what does that second line mean, that second part of this clause? And uniform laws on the subject of bankruptcies throughout the United States. So go ahead. I mean, does this mean that the federal government would have the authority to determine who could declare bankruptcy and who couldn't?
Well, yes, if it's uniform.
So actually uniform means it's applied to all.
Right.
Okay. Correct. So in other words, there you go.
Right?
So if you actually create an advantage for one and a disadvantage for another, then it's no longer uniform.
So let me give you something that's been in the news in the last year. I don't know where it's gone, but college debt forgiveness, right?
Yep.
This is a big one. Okay. Biden's trying to buy votes with college debt forgiveness. Has anyone ever told these kids? And by the way, the problem with this is that it is one of those. This not only is it not uniform, what's made it worse is that the rule is that you cannot declare bankruptcy for college debt, according to the current rule. In other words, you know, someone's got a financial problem. They can't deal with it. They get to declare bankruptcy, but people who have college debt are looking for amnesty. Here's for a couple of reasons. One, because someone said they could do it, but two, because they've made a rule at non-uniform that says you can't declare bankruptcy for college debt.
Okay,
is that right?
Right. So let's just look at what the whole point is.
Student loans.
So
right.
Well, okay. It's bankruptcy, right? Okay. So what is bankruptcy? Bankruptcy means you've come to a point. You've come to a point where you can't afford to pay the debts you've taken.
Right.
And it comes to a point of foreclosure. So what did they do and what were the laws in the beginning of the union? Okay, so you probably don't know this, but if you actually look and you do the research on this, you'll find that a sitting Supreme Court justice was thrown into bankruptcy jail, debtor's jail, because he couldn't pay his debt. He was actually removed from the Supreme Court while he was thrown in jail. I don't know if he was allowed to go back. I forget. But the bottom line is that there was a uniform rule. And, you know, if you couldn't pay your debt, these were the consequences. And the whole point was that it was uniform throughout the United States. So it's one thing to say that if you can't pay your debt, then here are the consequences. You have to go through bankruptcy court and your credit gets marred. There is a consequence for you to do that. Mm-hmm. But bottom line, the uniform rule is the expunging of debt. You can't say we're expunging debt, but we're not expunging debt. That is not a uniform rule. We're expunging this debt, but not that debt. That is not a uniform rule. That is precisely because we went through this in the ratification debates, how the federal government was not to be able to create favors or advantages.
Mm-hmm.
And they created a favor and advantage for themselves, because what other debt cannot be expunged?
IRS debt.
There you go. You can't get out of our debt. How is that a uniform? The states, well, you can get out of state debt. Well, no. We're now going to start. And this is the evil creep of how they say, okay, so we have these friends, people that are, you know, going to take your money and you can't get out of that. But everybody else, you know, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fact is either we have bankruptcy and a uniform rule for the bankruptcy, or they wipe out bankruptcy. And if they're going to do that, they have to amend the Constitution.
Right.
It means, folks, that we all have this right for being able to, you know, say, hey, I can't pay this debt, which means that you don't have a right to destroy me. You have a right to make me suffer, but you can't destroy me. And when they say that we will not expunge debt for these specific purposes, that is not a uniform rule.
Mm-hmm.
Uniform is applied to all. It's just like taxation. When they actually lay out tax, uniform means that everybody pays that same percent. Regardless of how much money you make, you cannot be, you know, targeted because you make more money.
Absolutely right.
It has to be uniform. The whole thought.
Wow. Imagine this. You've got people all over the country who have been smacked down by the IRS and put out of business because you can't declare bankruptcy on this debt. We're going to take it, and we're going to take what you have.
That is correct.
So many violations. Now, I think this is one of the reasons that people would just as easily abolish the IRS and get rid of the 16th Amendment, because of all the pain that it has caused and continues to cause. And now is promised that they're going to cause more, because Biden wants to hire 87,000 more IRS agents to do what? just what we described
here. Right. To basically reign tyranny. Right. Correct. Absolutely. So back to this little social media, because, you know, people, they get this in their craw that if it's listed here, then they can create laws and they can actually start creating this complex law. And a complex law is not a uniform law. A uniform law is very plain, simple, and it is applied across the board. That is a uniform law, and that's how the framers looked at this. They did not want the federal government to be able to reign tyranny and start, you know, creating using the devil's tool of division, of creating advantages for government loans instead of, you know, every, you know, commercial loans, private loans, what have you.
Okay,
so bottom line is, and let me just take this a different tact. If the federal government actually goes down the path of creating an advantage for one class of people, such as Hispanics on the southern border, you know, in other words, if you can get across our border, then we give you an advantage of being a U.S. citizen. Right here, it clearly says a uniform rule of naturalization. So does the federal government have the ability to create a advantage for one demographic over another?
No, it's not uniform.
That's correct. And so every country in the world that does not share a border with the United States, I've said this for years, they all have a right to sue, you know, the United States for not allowing them to come in at the same rate, you know, based on, you know, coming in via ship, coming in via aircraft, what have you. They should be able to overrun us equally. Which is why the naturalization laws dictate only so many immigrants a year. And we have a quota, folks, and that is the law, and it is a uniform application of naturalization and immigration, period. And so how is it that we look at naturalization, we understand what a uniform law is, and to, you know, again, back to this good gentleman, this gentleman I was talking about in social media, as I look at, you know, how he thinks, well, because that line is there, that means that they can make law regarding that. Yes, they make the uniform law. They cannot make laws that actually create advantages for themselves and disadvantages for others. In other words, if it is applied to one, it must be applied to all, period. Mm-hmm. Are we going to have bankruptcies? And right now, we are guaranteed bankruptcies because it's in the Constitution. If you want to take away bankruptcy and say, we're not going to have a uniform standard of bankruptcies, then remove that line. Then you leave it to the debtors, or I should say the creditors, you leave it to them to dictate what they will do with you. You know, if you can't pay me, then we can kill you. It'll be a capital offense in our state. If you can't pay your debt, you hang. You know, because then you now can have, I'll just call it the wild, wild west when it comes to how they can go after people. And the whole point was they wanted to make sure that there was a standard because there was obviously a disadvantage, or I shouldn't say a disadvantage. There wasn't an equal application of how bankruptcies were being held and done. And so you got to remember, how was Georgia brought into the Union? How was Georgia even created? It was a penal colony. And so I'm not sure if they, you know, had, you know, if they'd learned from their crimes or what have you. But, you know, if that was a state that was built by criminals, you know, and I'm not poking Georgia in the eye. It's a reputable state today. But if it was created by criminals, maybe they had a lot of latitude and leniency towards people who committed crimes. I don't know. But my point is obviously they included it because they perceived that it needed to be included because there was a disparity in how bankruptcies were held. So bankruptcies were guaranteed to all. and the standard had to be uniform, period. Whether it was a personal loan, whether it was a private bank loan, a corporate loan, or a government loan, it doesn't matter. Across the board, this is the application, this is the consequence, period. That's it. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Okay. Because, you know, people do go down this path of, well, it's in there so we can start regulating it and we can start creating these complex laws. No. That doesn't mean that, especially when it says uniform. Uniform right. means that they can't create complex laws. As a matter of fact, they can't create ex post facto laws. They can't create bills of attainder and punishment. And many people don't even understand that. We'll get to that when we get to that. But moving all on, right. the next one. Because we got 8 minutes left. So to coin okay. money, regulate the value thereof, and right. of coin foreign coin. Okay?
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
And to fix the standards of weights.
Weights and measures.
There you go. So there's a part of this that is absolutely red, violently being violated, which is to coin money and regulate the value thereof. Now, what is the regulating the value of a coin?
Determining what it's worth.
Well, right? So there's that, but there's actually the value of its purity as well.
Okay.
And so when you look at the very first Treasury Act, when they created, you know, and I think it was in 1792, it took them three, four years, to finally get to a point where they were going to start coining money. In other words, they didn't start creating coins in 1789. So it took them a while for Hamilton to finally get to that point. But if you read that act, they basically establish a purity, that a minimum standard of purity. The reason why this was important, because it was historically proven that throughout the, you know, all of the different governments from Greece to Rome and so forth, that one of the ways they would steal the wealth of the people, the, you know, the monarchs or whoever the government was at the time, the dictator, they would actually take the coinage and start, you know, siphoning off the silver and the gold and adding alloy into the mix so that, you know, the people didn't have pure gold. They had a little tin with their gold or lead and tin with their silver or what have you. And so the king or the dictator would have all this pure gold, which would increase what he had compared to them.
Right.
Right.
Yes, but how would they be able to tell? In other words, if it looked the same.
Yes. So what would happen is, you know, and they have these measurements, right? So a troy ounce is a very specific weight. And when you take a troy ounce of silver, it will displace water. When you put it in water, because of its density, it will displace so much water. A troy ounce of silver and tin, depending on how much tin it's added, it will displace more because tin is lighter. And so
displace more or displace less?
It will displace more because tin is lighter. So to have an ounce of a silver coin, it would be a little bit bigger.
Okay. Right.
Does that make sense? So they had these tests of how you could test the purity of the gold, silver, or what have you, based on its ounce, you know, grams or what have you. They just drop the, you know, the gold into, well, you got 1 gram here. Then you could, and it looked like all gold, but you didn't know. And you could actually see how much it displaced. And if it displaced what the pure 1 ounce of gold would be, then there you go. But in America, the coinage, I believe, was 90% silver. I don't think that they had the ability to get to 100% silver and 100% gold for quite a while. That's why all of the Morgan gold and, you know, the older gold that they coined was not as pure as a process.
Sure.
Okay, so it just took more energy to do that. And if you read the bill, and I'm going down a rat hole, but this is kind of in the digital currency petition that we have out there, that when you read that bill, they dictate, one, the purity, but they also dictate that any person with gold or silver could come to the mint. If you had, you know, silver, silverware, you could come to the mint and turn that in, and they would give you for the equivalent of value coins. In other words,
sure.
You didn't pay for them. You could just exchange your gold, your silver for the coins, and that would instantly give you, you know, a commodity into coinage. Mm-hmm. And so this is how they injected coins into circulation, getting more and more people to actually bring their gold, to bring their silver and those types of things into, you know, the mint. And that's how they started building. And this is how we get back to gold and silver coins today. This is how we can easily get back to that, because we easily have, you know, a lot of gold mines that are out there that have been capped for decades.
Why?
Why? Because the government didn't need it. They wanted to reserve that for the opulent controllers of the world. It was a part of the globalist plan. And yeah, I mean, Clinton made some big moves in Utah and some of the central rocky states to basically seal up any of these gold and silver mines.
Oh, I remember when he signed a piece of paper claiming that he took over Grand Escalante.
Okay. Yeah, and what because he did was he deliberately sealed up these mines and called them parks.
Right. He called them national parks, because I remember the governor of Utah flew to D.C. to appeal to Clinton, which probably wasn't the right thing to do. I think, GR, the right thing to do was for the state to call out the federal government and say, you don't have the authority to do that.
And they still don't. And they still don't. But my point is that these things can easily be injected. So does the state of Utah obtain an advantage over every other state because they have more gold?
How do you mean? I mean, if they have more gold, why?
Well, okay, so what would end up happening is people would be able to take the gold, they'd turn it into a mint, and they would probably go to the Colorado Mint, and they would turn the gold in and their silver, and they would walk out with the equivalent of gold, based on the law and based on the way they were trying to, you know, quickly surge coinage into currency. Then, boom, as you'd start moving that, then you could actually start accounting for those coins actually going into circulation.
Okay.
And in so doing, this is how, you know, they start pulling dollars out and allowing more and more coins to be going into circulation. Because what does that person do with those coins? They're going to throw it into the bank.
Okay.
And the bank will hold those coins, you know, a certain percentage of those coins, and then the bank would actually use the other percentage to either, you know, invest or pay other people with those coins. But that's how you basically replace our existing, and I know that there's economists and, you know, guys that are bean counters that, oh, well, there's some problems with that, but this is what we need to do. But it's not that hard. They had the exact same problem. Actually, it was a bigger problem at the founding of this Constitutional Republic, because all of the states had their own currency.
Right.
And they were able to overcome that. And they created a species that maintained a value and actually allowed America to become rich.
Mm-hmm.
And so, anyway. Well, with that, Paul, we're out of time, and we will have you back tomorrow to go through the next power in the Article 1, Section 8, the delegated or enumerated power. So, folks, you know, hopefully this is all good. I hope we're not lingering too long on these topics. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Moby Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Moby Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.